And so with that, I had the blessing of my rheumatologist. I had a diagnosis finally. I had a plan. And I went, well, I'm not staying at home looking at four walls. So I went, okay, now's the time to go.
Welcome to the Family Travel Podcast by A Big Peachy Adventure, where we help families plan their adventures, whether it's for a week, indefinite, or anywhere in between. No matter what your budget, we bring you hints and tips from the experts, inspirational stories of families who are living their dreams, as well as must-see highlights from places that we and our guests visit.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Travel Podcast by A Big Peachy Adventure. You're joined by Michael and Natalie. Now, a few apologies here. The episode has been a little bit delayed. If you've been following our travels, we've skipped the water and we were over in Bali. We'll use the time zones and finding it hard to coordinate with some of the amazing guests we've got coming up as the reason for not releasing this week's episode on time.
Oh, I totally blame Bali time.
I think it may be a couple of bintangs as well.
Totally bintang time. I'll be honest.
Yeah. Now, we've been asked a few times and a couple of other people have mentioned that, you know, they've thought about heading over to Bali or heading overseas from their lap. I would say it's actually something that's quite easy to do. It's actually quite inexpensive as well. Flights from Bali, from Darwin, are regularly around the $100 or less per person mark. We're lucky that my best mate lives here in Darwin, so we were able to leave our van in his front yard. Well, or outside of his front yard anyway, that's another story. But before that, we'd looked into it and, you know, we'd heard that it was $10 to $12 a night to look after the van. So, yeah, totally doable.
So it's been a little while since our last episode, but I'm hoping that has given everyone plenty of time to listen to it. We were really lucky to have Kaz Makepeace from the Wired Travel blog on, and she covered some really, really, really useful topics, which was about identifying and overcoming obstacles. Now, this could be to any area of your life, but particularly so when it comes to travel and making that big trip. That particular episode and interview was one of our most popular yet. So if you haven't, I urge you to go back and have a bit of a listen. It's really great. And it is the perfect lead-in to this week's episode, where we were lucky enough to have a conversation with Rochelle from YDIS, who we met back in Mataranka.
In particular, the thing I loved about our conversation with Rochelle is that a lot of people use health issues or the fact that they're a single parent or they have teenagers as an excuse not to travel. Rochelle uses all of these reasons as an excuse to travel. And what's really interesting is that both before and since we've been traveling, we've met people who have used, you know, health issues as a reason to say they can't travel. And, you know, when you hear Rochelle's story, you'll hear that not everyone was actually supportive of her. And if other people were in a similar situation, this could have planted a significant seed of doubt and made people think that they couldn't actually do it. So I think if you're on the fence about traveling because you think that you do have health issues or you do have teenage kids or you are a single parent, it's important to take other people's views into consideration, but ultimately you should be making your own decision.
So as I mentioned, we met Rochelle and her daughter Priya at Little Roper Homestead in Mataranka. They both came up and introduced themselves and we had a really lovely chat. My instant thoughts were, wow, look at this mum travelling with her daughter. That's amazing for a mum and a teenager to be travelling together. And I could see straight away that they shared quite a special bond. It was as we got to know them a little bit better that we both became really fascinated with their whole story. Rochelle alluded to the fact that she had some health issues. We could see that she was travelling solo with her teenage daughter. And one thing we have received is quite a few requests for episodes on solo parent travel, on travelling with teenagers, and not so much the health issues, but I'm sure there are people out there that it is an issue for them and they would like to know if they can work around it. We really hope you enjoyed the conversation we had with Rochelle. She covers a lot of valuable points. So without further ado, here is Rochelle from YDIS.
Rochelle, welcome to the Family Travel Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So Rochelle, just out of interest, can you tell us where you are now and more interestingly, how you got to be travelling on the road and in your current location?
We are on the middle of the west coast of WA, West Australia, and we're on a cattle station stay called Ballara Cattle Station. We've been on the road for 22 weeks now, and we've noticed that the longer we go, the more we're inclined to stay for longer periods of time. So I booked us in for a 5-day stay, but I think we'll end up staying for maybe a week, week and a half.
So what's so great about the Ballara Station? Tell us a bit about.
Well, I guess from our perspective, I'm travelling as a teenager. So my daughter's Priya, she's 14, and we stayed at some of the big fours, and she tends to not want to do the jumping castles and the big pillows. At cattle stations, there tends to be more older kid activities like building fires, making damper, you know, hanging out where there's horses and sheep and cattle, and so it's more fun for her. So she tends to be more interactive with other travellers at cattle station stays or farm stays than we are when we're going to somewhere like a big four.
Yeah, fair enough. And it's just you and your daughter travelling, and you've been on the road for 22 weeks, you said. Where did you leave from and what are you travelling in?
We left from Brisbane at Easter. Well, we didn't. We actually went from our home in Brisbane after we put everything in storage, and I gave away all our stuff to women's shelters and refugees. So then we went to the Commonwealth Games, which was, and stayed at Tweed Heads. So we started right on the border of New South Wales and Queensland, and then we headed north. So we've done over 25,000 kilometres, according to my car, and we went all the way to the tip of Queensland. So we went as far as Thursday Island, then went back down through the Gulf along the Savannah Way, crossed over into Northern Territory at Kamenwheel, and then went down to Uluru. And then from Uluru, we went north to Darwin, and then we worked our way across by Kununurra into Broome, and now heading down the west coast. So it's been a long time. We're completely on the opposite side of Australia to where we started out.
And you mentioned, you know, you're travelling by yourself with your 14-year-old daughter. How did you end up being on the road?
Well, this time last year, I was actually in hospital and lost the use of my legs. So I had nursed at home my father-in-law, and his wish was to die at home. So I nursed him until he passed away. And then 3 weeks later, I couldn't get off the couch. And so I ended up being taken to hospital and was in hospital for a week. And they couldn't understand why my spine was inflamed. So it was very, very painful. After 9 days in hospital, I was sent home. And then over the next couple of months, I attempted to go back to work return to work plans and so forth and so forth. And in the end, I just couldn't work. And I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis, which is a degenerative disease. It's not like your regular arthritis. This is where it's an autoimmune disease where my immune system is actually attacking my joints, including my spine. So when I saw my specialist in February, she said it takes anywhere from, you know, 6 months, 18 months, even could be 2 years before we're in a drug trial that would actually either minimise the effect of rheumatoid arthritis on my body, or the ultimate goal is to put it into remission, so have the disease become dormant in my system. And that's when I made the decision to, well, if I'm not going to work, why should I be staying at home looking at four walls? I had the works, and I was just like, do you mean all I have to do is like get blood tests now and keep taking pills? And she was like, yeah. And I said, so can I travel? And she said, as long as it's within Australia and you have access to, you know, where I can get my blood taken, she said, and you come back and see me every now and then, I don't have a problem with that. She did say at that point, though, that if I needed to go on chemotherapy, that I'd probably have to stop traveling. And so with that, I had the blessing of my rheumatologist. I had a diagnosis finally. I had a plan, and I went, well, I'm not staying at home looking at four walls. So I went, okay, now's the time to go. So I spoke to my family, I spoke to my friends, and you can divide them down the middle. You know, you've got those that are supportive and those that aren't supportive. You know, I had a family member literally abuse me on the phone going, what on earth are you doing? You know, don't do it, don't do it. And I was like, but I don't know if I'm going to get 200 metres up the road, but at least I'm going to get a car and a caravan and I'm going to make it, I'm going to give it a good shot. And I could understand those that got angry at me for not just putting myself, but also my daughter at risk. So, you know, travelling around Australia is not that hard, you know, but I have certainly had to travel smart and put, you know, backup plans and contingency plans in place. But unfortunately, when I went and saw my rheumatologist a couple of months ago and she said to me, look, I know you're coping really well on this drug trial, but your blood work's not telling us that it's actually doing the job effectively. So the disease is actually still quite aggressive in my system. So she then said to me, I have to go into chemo. And I immediately thought, oh no, I'm going to have to stop traveling. And I'd already said, you know, to my family and friends, look, I'm happy just to do around Queensland. You know, if I could just get around Queensland, that would be great. I wanted to get to the tip of Queensland and I wanted to get to Uluru. That was my big thing when I left that I wanted to do. And by the time I flew back to Brisbane and saw my rheumatologist, she said, but I've had a thought. I've been thinking about chemo and I think you can actually do this while you're traveling. And I'm like, really? So immediately I was like, I can actually go around Australia, not just do my two big bucket lists. I mean, I'd wanted to go to Mataranka. I've always wanted to go to Darwin. I wanted to see Kununurra. What about Lake Argyle? You know, so I immediately started getting really excited about I could actually do this, travel all the way around Australia while I'm on chemo. Then she just put some stipulations in place. I take an oral dose of chemo on a Wednesday. So she says, you know, I'm not to travel day Wednesday, Thursday, and I have to always be in mobile phone range. You know, make sure that for those 3 days I'm close to medical assistance and obviously continue have to keep getting my blood work done. And if I have any, you know, adverse symptoms or any, if I feel like I'm getting worse, then, yeah, of course we have to come home. And while all this is playing out, I've got a 14-year-old daughter who, you know, is seeing Australia. I'm seeing Australia and we're having a lovely, lovely time.
And I recall when we met you in Mataranka, you were saying how you've got friends who travel ahead of you and they feedback information to you so you can use what they say to help you figure out if you can do hikes or whatnot.
Yeah, because you meet families on the road. That's the best thing about and this is the thing that I really wanted to experience for myself. You know, the kids and I were in scouts. I was a Joy Scout leader. We used to go camping, you know, every term. You know, we used to do big group camps. The camping and traveling have always been an adventure. And when I talked about people that have traveled and I followed families that were on the road, I really wanted to experience that for myself. So when I, there's Facebook groups that you can join and I always made sure that I went out of my way to go and say hi to these families. A lot of big lappers have actually gone ahead of us. And so then they feed back to me. I mean, I do the Kings Canyon walk. It's a perfect example, whereas I thought there's no way I can actually do a grade four hike, and whereas other families were able to feed back to me going, oh, look, it's only the first section that's really tough, and if you can do like 300 vertical stairs, then you should be able to do it because that's the worst part. And I thought, oh, I could probably do that. Those stairs were tough. And my daughter, I think, walked them twice because she'd go up like 50 stairs and come back and go, oh, Mum, it's okay. There's a little ledge up here. If you get up the next 50 stairs, then you can have a rest. And she would sit and watch with me and we'd drink water and we'd have a chat. And then she'd run up the next couple of stairs and go, oh, there's another section up here, Mum, and then come back down and she'd walk with me. And then, yeah, walking around the rim of Kings Canyon was easy. It's beautiful. So, yeah, I'm really proud of the fact that we were able to do that. And yet, there's other places where there's no way. I've spoken to other travellers and most of the time I don't even have to mention I've got mobility issues. I just talk to them about, you know, fitness, endurance and what do you need. And they're like, oh yeah, it was a tough day. Like there's three gorges. And I said, by the second gorge the next day, we were just knackered. And then we skipped over the third gorge because we were just so tired. And I go, oh, that's great. Yeah, I don't think we'll get there. We pushed for time. We're just going to have to skip over that. And And most people just take that on face value. But mentally, I'm making notes going, yeah, no way my body's going to be able to do that.
I'm almost making mental notes on that one too right now.
And what I love about that entire story is that a lot of people use, you know, even minor health issues as a reason not to travel, whereas you sound like you've had, you know, some fair challenges with your illness and you've used it as a reason to travel, which is amazing because it's not like I'm too sick to travel, it's I'm too sick to stay home. So that's inspirational. I think anyone who's sitting on the fence and thinking, oh, I've got this medical issue, like you said, if you plan smart, you can quite often work your way around it.
That's definitely it. Like most people that are traveling with chronic illness, you don't wave it as a flag, you know, when you're walking around going, hey, look at me, I've got a chronic illness, everyone hear my story, because no one wants to hear it, right? But then you meet other travellers. We were at Alice Springs and I was talking to this guy, it was mid-afternoon, and, you know, and then as we were talking, and they were flying back to Sydney. And I'm like, oh, we've just flown back to Brisbane. And we, you know, so we're chatting about the cheap flights and stuff like that. And he just let slip, oh, yeah, we fly quite regularly. And he's like, I'm a little bit different. He goes, I'm getting cancer treatment. And I'm like, oh, cool, you're on chemo. And he's like, yeah. I'm like, me too. What type are you on? So he starts looking at chemo and various treatments, and he's getting infusions, and I'm on tablets. And so I just normalized it. This is something that's so normal. People on chemo travel all the time, even if you're having to fly back to Sydney and get infusions. And he's like going, if I'm going to vomit, he goes, I might as well be vomiting while I'm going to Uluru. He said, if I'm tired, he goes, I get to sleep and look out my window and I can see the beautiful stars and know that I'm in Alice Springs and I'm not stuck at home where family and friends don't want to come around and see me because I'm on chemo. And it's an awkward conversation and it's hard with family because they don't know what to say. He goes, but here, he goes, no one needs to know. He said, and we just talk about travel and places we've been and where we're going. And he said, and no one treats me any different. And I said, that's how I feel as well, because not very often I speak to people about my health issues. And when I do, they are generally, you know, go, oh, that's, you know, great and inspiring. But it's not really, but they treat me no different because I can talk about Matarenka, I can talk about the next stop, I can talk about where we've been, you know, and I'm just another traveller.
Mm.
I'm not Rochelle on chemo and no one wanting to talk about, you know, this disease of rheumatoid arthritis and what it's actually taking away from my quality of life, whereas travel's added to my quality of life and I've got something really positive to talk about.
And in terms of funding the travels, how's that happening with the taking the time away from work because of the return to work plan?
Well, I was a contractor, and due to the super fund that I made regular contributions into, I applied to my super for an allowance. In acute situations, you can actually get a six-month allowance, and then when you get into a chronic area, you can actually get an allowance, and this also depends on your medical condition and, you know, any super fund and the rules of your super fund, but you can actually get an allowance for up to 2 years. So how we're living on the road is actually funded by my super paying an allowance back to me.
That's interesting. So I think a lot of people out there may not be aware that you can access your super fund early if you've got a chronic health condition and maybe potentially use that as a way to fund travel or any other goals they've got.
Certainly, if you have a chronic health issue, and I'm actively working with my specialist to try and be symptom-free, my super fund is continuing to pay me.
And speaking of Matarenka, I mean, that's where we first met. And
yeah.
I guess the first challenge that I noticed that you've had to overcome is that it's just yourself and your daughter. When Natalie and I set up or pack up and all of that, we've got two sets of hands plus, the kids as well helping and all of that sort of thing. We can take turns driving. A lot of people feel like, you know, we've had feedback that I couldn't do it because I'm by myself with my child. How have you found, you know, in addition to or completely separate from the health issues, traveling as a single parent?
Physical side of things is some things are challenging for me. Like I can't unhitch, or Priya tends to unhitch from me. But then in saying that though, she doesn't let anyone help her unhitch. The amount of times at caravan parks that grey nomads have come up to Priya as a teenager when they see her he's standing back and letting her unhitch. They want to step in and help. And she's like, no, I'm fine. I know exactly what I'm doing. And she finds it really annoying when people help because they get things out of sequence and they set things up wrong. And so, yeah, she takes care of that and putting down the stabilizer legs. The hardest part is the arguments that we have when we're backing the caravan.
I don't think that's a single parent daughter relationship issue. I think that's everyone.
It's common, yeah.
I know. And she happily tells everyone how crap I am at it. You know, we have the same arguments that everyone else does. So, yeah, so I never saw that as an issue for us. And I think that for me, this whole trip has been about embracing my fear and not letting it hold me back. You know, the fear of the unknown with my disease, the fear of not knowing what drug trial is going to work, the fear of am I ever going to work again, is like, you know, there's so much fear that can actually stop you from actually living life. So I could easily still be at home on my couch. It's an easy life on the road as well because there's so much more company.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, there are so many people out there travelling and you don't realise until you're out in it. Then you think everyone's travelling.
Yeah.
Now, one of the issues that I have heard single parents talk about is around safety. Are there any considerations that you have, like when you pull up to a camp spot or anything with Priya? Like, has there ever been a time where you felt unsafe and driven on?
Well, I should say 99% of the time, no. And so I don't want to start off with that whole one time we felt unsafe. And that was, we were staying at a town. And we were in a caravan park that was on a main road and it wasn't actually fenced. So this was in far north Queensland and we're in this caravan park and they had a massive rodeo on that weekend. So yeah, the population swelled by a third and there was lots of people walking around. There was big street parades and in the middle of the night, the door was rattled. Yeah. And there was certainly someone trying to get into our van. And that was the one and only time that we've actually gone, someone's actually come into our personal space that wasn't invited and it was in the middle of the night. And so I don't know if it was just a drunk cowboy who forgot where he was staying and our van looked the same as his, but that was certainly a night where I was very happy to get out of that town and be on the road again. And the other place, which is going to be for all the wrong reasons, was Alice Springs. But walking around town was fine. We didn't have a problem with the locals. But it was just the presence of so many police and security. So, you know, to walk into Coles and there's police standing on the door and there's security walking around the shopping centre car park, that made us be on edge.
Mm.
We never felt that from any of the shoppers or the people in the car parks or the people there. And there were certainly, you know, of all different colours and ethnic backgrounds, but it was only the heavy presence of police there that actually made us feel a bit weird.
So has it changed your approach to camping, though? I mean, has it meant that you tend to stick towards, you know, the gated sort of caravan parks, or do you free camp just as much as any other family? Or what would your advice or hints and tips for other travelling families be who are in a similar situation?
Well, there's plenty of single mums at free camp because I follow them on social media and they just generally camp at free camps where there's other people camping. I mean, I don't know about you, but I personally have seen myself free camps that are packed.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do the same thing. And it's like you pull into one, it's like there's vans everywhere. You feel completely safe. You go somewhere else and it's just one van. It looks a bit Wolf Creek-ish.
You keep on driving.
Yeah. So we're the same.
But yeah, that's my experience of free camping. You know, it's never been... I think the fear comes from people who haven't done it.
We should touch on Priya travelling with a 14-year-old. A lot of the families that we meet, they're all travelling with young children. A lot of them are under five, a handful at primary school. Very rarely do we come across other families that have got teenage children. And I know that there are lots of families who are wanting to do a lap who have got teenagers and they're a little bit worried about it. So could you perhaps talk to us about what it's like travelling with a teenager and schooling and all that sort of stuff?
I highly recommend it. It's been the best thing. And that's not to say that that it can be challenging. But I think it depends on the personality of the child. If I have an older son and he's with his dad and he's doing grade 11 and he's a prefect and he's got two part-time jobs and he's got his learner's license and his sole focus is, you know, getting through, meeting all these milestones, getting through high school and graduating. So to do a lap for him, he'd love to do it. He's an extrovert and this would be so his thing. And he would just be wanting to jump out of planes and, you know, go deep sea diving with spear fishermen. You know, he's just that adventure kid. Whereas my daughter is more of an introvert. So this has been a big challenge for Priya in that she's really had to step up and introduce herself to other people and be involved in conversations. So I found to start off with, she would literally stand behind me and wouldn't interact. She'd just be on her phone. But slowly but surely, she's come out of her shell. And I think because she's in grade eight, I wouldn't say it's a nothing year, but it's not a NAPLAN year. It's not a year where they're having to, you know, pick subjects that are going to get them, you know, a tertiary education score. So it really is a year that you can have on the road, grade 7, 8, 9, and sometimes even grade 10 would be the perfect year to get kids out of school, away from the bullying. And this is where they're really developing their personalities. Because I was saying some of the issues that I have with Priya is actually getting her to engage. She'll quite happily just sit on her phone. And I've deliberately not taken the phone off her because, A, she's the only child in our little group here. And I think she still needs to be able to have access to teenage stuff.
Is she using the, I guess, the phone as a way to maintain contact with her friends through social media? And, you know, has that been much of an issue for her and not being there physically with them? Or is she, you know, from what you're seeing, being able to maintain the relationships with her friends through that?
Well, that's it. I didn't want her just to disappear and come back after 9 months away and go, hey, I'm here, you know, because that would be even harder for her to integrate back into, you know, which is next year, grade 9, and having lost contact with all her friends. You know, this is me taking her out of her comfort zone, taking her away from her school and her friends and, you know, isolating her from what is our home base for 9 months. I wanted her to be able to keep in contact with all those friends, to maintain those relationships and then be able to integrate back in.
And it's funny because we've had the same thing with Chloe, where she was quite introverted, had a small circle of friends. And one of the things we were quite worried about with the homeschooling aspect of things was not academics, but not socializing. But being in this sort of situation has almost encouraged her. I wouldn't say forced her, but, you know, she's more proactive in actually going and seeking out friends who might be in a completely different age bracket.
Yeah, and that's great, isn't it? When you see your child having opportunities that they wouldn't get at home and they're actually stepping up to it instead of shying away from it. Because this is, you know, not only me being out of my comfort zone and facing my fears, they're having to be out of their comfort zone and facing their fears, which is fabulous. And the whole learning on the road, people talk about the road pooling. I went down the road of doing distance ed. So Bear was enrolled in a distance ed program where the lessons were recorded. So she could either participate in them, which was easy to do when we were in Queensland because the distance ed was based in Queensland. And so she would be able to interact with kids and teachers online and the lessons were recorded. And then if she wanted to, she could go back and review the lesson. Or if we were travelling and didn't have access to 4G, she would then be able to go when we got to a 4G spot or watch the lessons she had missed. But then there was so much that we have learned, and you hear this all the time about the road schooling. So we did struggle through distance ed, and she got really good results, which we were both surprised at. Not saying that she wasn't when she was back in the mainstream, but it was just switching to that screen-based learning, not that overtly interactive class environment that she was used to. You know, when we learned about the silica sand when we were in the Whitsundays and how it was formed and she was so fascinated by this sand and experience that when she was doing a geography assignment with her distance ed, she based it on silica. And so then she did a whole research project on silica and how it's formed and what they use it for and how it's mined and the properties of it. Yeah. And then recently when we were in Darwin and we were climbing over some walkways and you can go down and see dinosaur prints, but we had to climb over all these sandstone rock formations. And she was fascinated because when she touched it, it crumbled under her fingers. And so then she had this whole big conversation with me about, in geography, when she wrote it finally about silica, another kid wrote it about sandstone, and she's seen it before in buildings. She understood how it was mined and what it looked like. But then here we were sitting on these cliffs, and she wasn't interested in the dinosaur prints, but she was fascinated about the layers of the sand and how it crumbled under her hand, but how it was actually solid like stone. And we had a half an hour conversation about what she knew about sandstone. And I'm like, wow.
And it's funny because we quite often hear that when we're speaking to other families, that because they're in the moment and they're experiencing what they're learning, it just sinks in so much and they can apply it to so many other contexts compared to, sitting in a classroom and learning about some abstract thing that you can't visualise and the pictures in the textbooks aren't great or whatever.
Well, this is an abstract lesson that was applied in real life.
So we've come to the part where we ask all our guests if they were to have a giant billboard placed in the middle of a big city with advice to other travelling families or families sitting on the fence, maybe with the teenagers, maybe who are sick or are single parents, what would you say on that billboard?
My advice to everyone is just get out there and do it. I caught this the other day on a Facebook page where someone said, "It's 6 months. Can you travel Australia in 6 months?" And I've met plenty of families that have done that and in less time. I've met a couple that are doing it in 12 weeks. And I'm like, wow. And he goes, "But I love the driving. And we've got a few things on our bucket list that we want to tick off. And we've only got 12 weeks to do it." And I'm like, yes, that's the attitude I want. And you just do it. If you want to do it, just do it. If this is your thing, just get out there. Just start exploring. And I don't care if it's just for a weekend, a school holidays, and I love, camping at places on school holidays where the whole place just gets filled with kids, because quite often parents just, take the kids camping on school holidays, which is great because that's how most families are structured. I just love the fact that they're getting out there and doing it, getting kids off screens, getting them playing in the dirt. I'm always, it's a proud mummy moment for me when my daughter just sits on the ground and just puts her hands in the dirt, and, whether she's clearing something away because we're unhitching or we're playing bocce here at the campground. I love it when kids are able to be kids outside. So, yeah, just get out there and do it.
Lovely. And for those people out there listening who'd love to follow along on your journey, where can people find you?
I made up a name. So it was easy for people to find us. It's Whydiss, which is Whydiss. And you can find us on Facebook or Instagram. The made up name is because Why Not was taken. And I was tired of people dismissing us, saying we couldn't do it or we shouldn't do it. So that's how we got Whydiss.
Awesome. Look, we have really loved talking to you today. It's been awesome, and it's a lot of takeaways for a lot of people. I know we've had a lot of people specifically requesting what we've covered today, so I think there's something in it for most listeners. So we really appreciate you taking out the time.
Thank you for listening to A Big Peachy Adventure, Families Travelling Full Time. What drives us is hearing of those we've inspired to simplify their life and take the first step towards their travelling goals. So please, if you get any value from what we're doing, the biggest reward we could ask is that you share this podcast with your travelling buddies. Don't forget to click subscribe, and also please leave us a review. 5 stars hopefully, but if not, that's okay. Please leave a comment and let us know what we can do better. If you'd like to connect with us personally or have any questions, you can find us on Facebook at A Big Peachy Adventure. See you on the road, and happy travels.